the light, everyone. I am your doubly excited Aes Sedai from the last time you heard me. And these are still, believe it or not, my wolf brothers.
I am your attempting to be professional Sedai tonight.
Good luck with that.
First bourbon. Took it easy. It's Saturday. Just saying.
And our third man is...
I am your brown Sedai, because I'm going to ask a lot of questions tonight.
You don't need to make it sound like a threat.
It's always a threat.
I'm going to grill you, big boy.
I might have to figure out how to use my mute button so we can rotate our talking points, because we have a very special guest coming on, simply known as the editor. What? Justin's going to do a little introduction. We're going to get him in here soon, because speaking of being professional, he's been in the waiting room for a little while because he didn't want to be late, even though I was late letting my co-host in. It's just it's a mess.
Well, I will say this. We just released the episode of the Watt fan edit, and I got a little blurb from him, and so he's going to choose to stay anonymous, simply, like you said, known as the editor. He is our foretelling, time traveling, and making things better Sedai, apparently, today. And just a guy with a laptop, a crazy idea, and some spare time over the December holidays. A mysterious figure who dwells in the shadows, but not the shadow. Not the shadow. Some say he still edits to this day. So let's get ready to meet the man and the myth and the legend, the editor.
Oh, look at that. This man is a professional.
The masked wheel of time, man.
He's got us beat hands down.
Hey, guys.
Hello, Mr. Is it Mr. Editor or Captain Editor? What's your preferred?
Maybe Editor.
There we go. Oh!
Honestly, I haven't even thought of that. Just call me Editor. It's fine. How are you guys doing? Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. This is an exciting moment for this Wheel of Time podcast. This is an overwhelming moment for me, who's been doing lots of different podcasts for a couple years now, and to get a creator of something that we've talked about on the show is just a huge leap for the Sounds Awesome Nation. So thank you for being here.
It's a pleasure, and I think you're kind of overselling it. It's honestly a great pleasure for me to be on any podcast, and especially yours, since you guys have watched it, you've supported it, and you've enjoyed the show. So thank you.
We will be no more than the first podcast you appear on. I guarantee you that. You put out a fine product, sir.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
So we're going to... Justin just read your intro, your blurb. That's awesome. And is there anything else that you want to, you know, tell our listeners? Like, I'm just going to add, like I said, you can stay as anonymous and on any terms that you want. But the first dumb question I want to ask, just because, like I said, you really do put out a fine product. What's your day job?
So I do actually have a day job. I'm a management consultant, so which means I help clients tell them how to run their business, I guess, if that's the prevailing definition. So I do have an actual job, and this is just something I did over weekends, you know, and in my spare time.
Did you just say you did this over a weekend?
Not a weekend, over several weekends.
Okay.
Roughly how many hours do you think you put into it? That was one of the things we were kind of debating, like what do you think you...
In the end, I think it took about 8 weekends of work. So,
wow.
Yeah. So maybe at the outside 100 hours, but I think definitely less.
Oh, okay. That's what Des said. He was like, probably got to be at least 100 hours of work to put this together like this.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, you know, the most interesting part was, you know, I don't actually have any editing experience. So this was my first time trying something like this.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No. So my motivation was just to, I'm sure you guys have heard of all these different Star Wars edits and so on, right? And one of the things that always stuck with me about, because I had watched a few of them before, one of them that stuck with me was that it really helps to tighten up the story and give it some focus. And in some cases, we all know about the prequels and people's issues with them. It actually helps to cut out some of the sort of really weirder parts of those movies and make it really tightly focused. So that was sort of my experience of fan editing as an audience. And this fan edit was just an idea that I had. I felt as if the season had a story in there, and there were perhaps too much side quests or world building that was not relevant to the main theme of the season. And I thought I could try my hand at it. So I just Googled some software. I think I went through four different editing softwares until I found something that kind of worked. I had to learn the basics from YouTube tutorials and just chucked everything into a blender and started cutting and, went from there.
Wow. So what you used to make it, was it purely the shows? Did you have any outside music or anything that didn't appear in the broadcast version of the show?
It ended up being only the show, only what was broadcast. I had tinkered with using the Origin shorts as some intro material. And I also thought about using the soundtrack and so on to fill in music. But in the end, I actually just used the soundtrack of the show, the video, the visuals of the show, and went from there. The nice thing is, it is in 5.1. So you had your center channel, which was your voice, and then the music were in the other channels. Because I heard you guys speaking about the audio blending. So that was something that I had to do sort of, on each cut the vocal track at a certain point, but then blend the music tracks across different scenes to avoid any, clicks and things like that.
Very cool. It didn't even occur to me that if you're capable of splitting it into 5.1, then you actually do have an audio. So when you were looking at your software, did you have 6 audio tracks?
Yes, exactly. I ended up using DaVinci Resolve. And by the way, anybody who wants to get their feet wet in editing, it's free. It's fully featured. I don't know why they give it away free. It's a proper professional editing suite used by Hollywood editors. There's a free version and a paid version. The free version doesn't have any restrictions.
Wow.
And you pull the soundtrack in and it gives you sort of, 5 audio tracks with your video track above it. And you can literally start cutting and pasting per track.
Dude, that's crazy. I find it, I'm kind of mind blown that you don't have any editing experience. I mean, obviously, if you're technology, savvy, you can figure it out. But, dude, I would have thought you'd have been doing this for a long time.
No, not at all. Actually, and that's the trick, right? At least I am quite tech savvy, grew up with computers. So I know how to figure things out. And I learned a lot from just watching YouTube tutorials. There's so many people that put out content on YouTube about how to edit, how to use the software. It's amazing.
You learn anything on YouTube.
It was actually quite tricky because, like I said, I went through 4 different software packages and wasn't sure what I was doing. I didn't even know there's such a thing as, the timeline and your media pool where you need to save the files to and then drag it onto the timeline. Well, anyway, I figured it out from the basics and then just went from there.
I'm not even going to tell you how much money I spent at school learning all this shit. Because I went mostly for audio, but they, they made sure that we knew how to handle video and all that too. So I think this really goes to show the care that a real fan can have. Because if you were just kind of like, I'd like to just, make this story move along a little faster, you could have just chop, 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 edited together and it would have been just fine. But the real care you showed in making sure that you did this in a way that was complete, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, one of the things I really wanted to do was put out a film that people could actually just watch, right? And my litmus test is always somebody who has never seen the show, never read the books, doesn't actually know about it, and just somehow hears about this fan edit and just sits down to watch it. They should be able to experience it like a normal film. It must have an introduction, must have a build-up, it must have some tension building, and then ultimately have a resolution and a satisfying payoff.
Yeah.
And that's kind of was my aim going in.
And you succeeded. Very much so.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I say flying colors. I mean, my wife is someone who's, she's a very, she has a really hard time suspending the disbelief. She's like, I know you love Star Wars, but just, lightsabers aren't fucking real, dude. And I'm just like, I know, but it'd be so cool if they were. But so even she's like, she was like, this was much easier for me to follow because, it tracks better. There's a little bit too much extra stuff in the episodes. And I, as a fan, you want to drink all that up. You love it. But it's like for someone who's just trying to watch it casually, it's like, I would like to get through the story and figure out what the story is. Yours is honestly much better to watch.
Thanks. Thank you very much. And tell your wife thanks. I really appreciate feedback like that.
Can we get a background for you? Fatty and I have talked about how we started, you know, reading the books when we were younger.
Yeah.
And how we were introduced to them. Can you give us a background in the books for us? Let us know how you started.
Yeah. So I think Wheel of Time is probably my fourth-ish fantasy series. You know, I started in high school with Eddings, which was really, really good. Did sort of Dragonlance, David Gemmell, you know, these types of one-shot fantasy books, but then also that link to a broader series. And I don't know how I found Wheel of Time, but I did eventually find it. And it was probably the most, you know, since Eddings, which was a five-book series with a five-book sequel, this was kind of the most, let's say, linked together long-form story that I'd gotten into. And it was super interesting to really get into something with so much depth and so much time allocated to building the world and the characters. I think, you know, I can't remember that far back, but I'm pretty sure I started around book 5, 6. I remember back in those days when the new book came out, you used to reread everything from book 1 again, right? With each new release. And I remember doing that. And I distinctly remember the slog being quite tough because then you started to think, okay, this is too much to reread from the start again, and I don't want to sit through this book again.
Well, you get so ramped up by Dragon Reborn, and then it's just like, ugh.
Exactly. I think up to Lord of Chaos, it's really, really good.
Yeah.
And honestly, I didn't appreciate it as much the first time around. I was younger. I wasn't really, you know, able to absorb the story and think back and theorize and do all those things. And now that I'm busy with a reread, I think I'm getting a lot more satisfaction out of it. But yeah, so that's my kind of journey. Went through the slog, you know, went through Robert Jordan passing away, which was really, really a sad time. Obviously for him and his family, but also for us as fans, just thinking that this series that we invested so much in and really believed in might not get finished. And then, of course, Brandon picked up the torch and pulled it off.
What do you think of Brandon Sanderson's finishing? And I personally thought it was amazing. I thought he captured kind of the first three books pacing, but I'm curious to see what you think.
So I think The Gathering Storm was interesting because the change of writing style was very, very evident. And I had a moment of, oh no, this is not going to feel like the Wheel of Time I knew. But I think by the time Towers of Midnight came out, he really found his feet, right? And then it was, you know, as you said, the pace picked back up because we're getting towards the final battle. There's no need to go off and do other things anymore. All the plot lines start heading towards the final battle. And I think the last book really, really nailed it, right? Like it was the one thing that you could, after 13 previous books, is the one thing you couldn't drop the ball on, was to really nail that final battle and the final closing of the story, which he did fantastically well.
Yeah, I've read that one like 5 times, and plus I've listened to it a couple of times too. So,
and honestly, huge respect to him, right? Like it must be an impossible task to take on another author's work and finish something that they built up over so long and do it in a way that sort of, you know, look, people always going to want to know how RJ would have ended it himself. But the way Brandon did it is very satisfactory. And, you know, you can live with that as the next best thing that could have happened.
Well said.
Nice. Well, and Jeremy, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't Harriet, his wife, and he had left like copious amounts of notes of how he wanted it to finish for Brandon Sanderson.
I believe you're right.
He was like, they're like, you're going to finish this in a book. He's like, I'm going to finish it in 3. And they're like, okay.
Yeah, you can't rush a Robert Jordan story. Then they'll know it's fake.
Exactly.
Big time.
You know, the nice thing is that that Gathering Storm and Towers of Midnight don't feel like, you know, biding time until the end, right? It's not as if it needed the 3 books, right? And those 3 books stand on their own. It's not like they just padded it out to be longer.
It's like a race to the end, not a marathon. It's like, holy crap.
So, Jeremy, do you have any other opening before we start getting into our questions about the cut itself? I just want to make sure we get out any other questions.
No, I just wanted to make sure that we had that opening so we could establish you know, how you got into the books. But then now we can ask, what do you think of the TV show?
Oh, TV show is interesting because my opinion goes back and forth on it, right? I think, let me start from the top. I think it's a 6 out of 10.
Okay.
Right? Which is better than average. You know, you can sit down and watch it. It's not something you're especially going to tune in for if you're not already a fan of the material. And it has some room for improvement. I don't buy the argument that the show is a desecration of Robert Jordan and it's irredeemable, all that nonsense.
Let me finish.
I think there's a lot of redeeming qualities in the show. I also don't buy the argument that it's magnificent writing and fantastically brought to screen. I do think there's some definite challenges in the writing. I'm one of those people, and there's very few, who thinks episode 3 was the best. I acknowledge that episode 4 is probably technically better, but episode 3 is still my favorite. I do rate the first 4 episodes higher than the back 4, and I think the story lost its way in episodes 5 to 7. We know 7 and 8 were affected by COVID and other issues, but I think the story lost its way from 5 already. And I think COVID is the straw that broke the camel's back, but it's not the only reason why the show sort of landed softly at the end.
Well said.
Yeah, it sounds like you think it would be hard for someone who's not a fan of the books to find something to latch on to.
No, I think there are stuff to latch on to. I just don't think it stands out if you're browsing the Amazon homepage. It's not going to stand out against The Boys, The Expanse, you know, other shows that you've probably heard of more in your social media circles.
Agreed.
You know, we are such a passionate fandom. I think we all wanted it to be Game of Thrones, right? We wanted it to be the show that our colleagues at work spoke about the next morning around the water cooler.
Yeah, it's not that. I hope it becomes that.
It's not that, right? Exactly, exactly. Because, I mean, you know, we want to be the ones...
We all want it to become that, but...
Exactly, and we want to be the person that everybody else asks questions to, right? Like, okay, so what happened in yesterday's episode? Can you explain this? And it just hasn't happened yet.
I really think... Because even people I talk to, I'm new to the series. I'm not even through book 2 yet.
Oh, you've got a wonderful journey ahead of you.
I just started Shadow Rising for like the 10th time. So
that book is so amazing.
Yeah, it's good.
I think I can't really wholeheartedly recommend the show yet. But I think, you know, season 2, once they get into the Great Hunt and once they're really on the journey by season 3, I think it's going to be a lot easier to recommend and maybe say, you know, First season's a real setup season, like just hang in there, but it's going to lead somewhere that's pretty cool. I think this show could have like almost a resurgence in season 3.
I think that's honestly something we all hope for.
I feel like they're intentionally vague about stuff.
I think it's something we all look forward to, right? Like season 2 should have a much less troubled production. You know, COVID is now a known quantity that you're dealing with. It's not going to catch you by surprise with random, you know, shutdowns and so on. And also, you know, people need to sort of also realize that a lot of the so-called budget for season 1, and people say it's a high budget show, it went into a lot of capital expenses in the first place, right? They built a studio in Prague. They obviously had to spend money on sets and so on that gets reused in later seasons. Now with season 2, they can focus all their money and all their effort on just shooting the show itself. So now it comes down to the writing, right? There are no other excuses other than writing and production. So season 2 is on them.
Yeah, they had their grace period. I agree 100%. Yeah, they had their grace period and they really better nail. I mean, you know, I'm just happy. You know, I don't know if you are familiar with the Sword of Truth series. First couple of books are really good and then it gets very just repetitive. And then they made a show. What was the show called, Jeremy? Was it just the Sword of Truth?
Was it Legend of the Seeker or something?
Legend of the Seeker.
Legend of the Seeker. It was
the man
so
knows what he's talking
terrible.
About.
And I'm just like, I just please just don't make it Winter Dragon and don't make it that. It's, I mean, except for you can have Billy Zane, hashtag as Asmodean.
As Asmodean.
I want him as Moradin, actually. I want him to come back as Moradin. It would be amazing.
Okay.
Dude, I think it would be kick-ass if he came back as Moradin. I'd be stoked about that. That was one of the first... I think I said that at the very beginning. I was like, if he would come back as Moradin, that would be the shit.
That would be pretty cool.
Kill off Ferris, and then, you know... that would be the best. He's kind of puffy these days, though. Moradin's kind of a young, like, tough guy. Like, have you seen Billy Zane and the Boys? He's a little big. Ah. He doesn't look the same.
You can hire a personal trainer for that.
Yeah.
You know, get in the gym, you know, drop some calories. Hey, is there any way that you can edit Billy Zane into your next, you know, Wheel of Time edit it? Just superimpose his face over over the guy who plays
Ishmael. Just a quick like, green screenshot of him in the background. Just, was that?
Yeah.
Oh, that would be great.
Like when Perrin, was that Billy Zane?
Oh, please. Oh, that would be so great.
Oh, please. Never wanted anything
come
so
on,
bad.
Come on.
It's an interesting idea. Definitely something to think about.
That sounds like a hard no.
Did you stretch out any of Pod and Fane's like little parts? Like I felt like he was just a little bit more... maybe it was because it was... you changed the lighting, right?
No. This is so funny because I heard your guys' review.
I swear. Maybe it was just because I was watching on the computer then. Maybe. I don't know. It just seemed so much more well lit.
Yeah. I heard your guys' review and you know, I listened to it end to end. Thank you so much also for your praise of the show, of the edit. There's some things I did and some things I didn't do, and people somehow caught on to things I didn't do and kind of highlighted them, which is really interesting for me. So you mentioned the lighting and sort of how things are a bit brighter and easier to see. Other people mentioned the somehow the editing of certain scenes or how it landed really well and so on, which are also scenes that I hadn't touched, right? And what it comes down to for me, I think, I don't know if you actually noticed this, but I did crop the aspect ratio of the movie. So I cut it down from the 16:9, which fills the full TV screen, to something a bit more widescreen, because I feel that's a bit, you know, for me, it's a little bit more cinematic, right? Like you,
absolutely.
You're watching a widescreen movie. It feels like you...
Letterbox style.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that just somehow the tighter framing, perhaps there were some elements cut out top and bottom that, that makes it easier to see what's going on in the center of the screen or calls attention to something. And I think people subconsciously picked up on that and then identified it as, you know, better being able to see the action, identifying things like, oh, you cut the scene really well. It really landed in the movie in the way it didn't land in the show. And I'm like, I didn't touch that scene.
No, I did that like three separate times. And the one time, like I said, the Trollocs in Emmonsfield, I just seemed like they were so much more. There was the time in the tent, I just noticed the fire playing off Perrin's face so much more than it did, I thought. And then during the reveal, I'm like, dude, he did something to this. And you're like, no, I didn't do anything to it. It's just, I think it was just the overall feel of it coming together. You get distracted by, I'm going over here, I'm going over here. It's all one shot. And you get the poignant shots into the, like, that's what I think that you really, I guess you didn't touch that, but you succeeded in making that scene itself so much more poignant. And so even like leaving Emmons Field felt so much more epic. Like it was almost like an afterthought in the show. It's like, yeah, we got to get out of here. It's like, well, okay, I guess we're going. We don't got a choice. But even leaving it just the way that you cut it together, it seems so much more like this is real shit. This is final. We're not coming back here. This is it. We're leaving here and we're never coming back. And you don't get that vibe. And I know that in the books, it's a little bit more like, hey, we might go back. But it's like you needed to feel like you were, for the show's sake, to really suck people in, I feel like you need to know like this is it. They're not going to see their homes again. Or maybe one or two of them will, but most of them are never coming back.
There's something to be said about the show being an episodic narrative. So every episode needs to start and finish. And the next episode starts with its own cold open and then has to start and finish. Versus the movie, which is continuous throughout and just, you know, the story just keeps going, right? So let's take that scene, for example. In the show, they start leaving over the Moraine voiceover dialogue, right? And then it cuts to black end credits. Episode 2 then starts with the Valda cold open in the White Cloaks camp. And then you've got the brand new title sequence. So by the time you actually get to the Trollocs chasing them again, you're in a different mindset, right? And you've maybe not thought about the end of the last episode. Whereas in the film, because you're trying to cut it for continuity, the departure from Emmonsfield with Moraine's voiceover cuts straight into them being chased by Trollocs. And it's just go, 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 right? So you get the sense of, okay, these Trollocs are going to keep chasing them. And there's no way they're going to get back home. And that's probably what you're feeling as it plays out.
Because, yeah, like Justin was saying, you get kind of like, you know, if you don't get lulled to sleep in between episodes and maybe waiting a whole week before you even see it, like you just kind of, you're kind of half-ass watching.
My ADD ass.
You know, a conversation that doesn't really matter. And then you don't realize when the action picks up again and you look back to the screen a few seconds later. Before I forget... we don't want to keep you too long, but...
No, it's fine. I've got the whole day.
All right.
First of all, you're in the future, right? You're tomorrow. You're Sunday.
It's Sunday, yeah. Sun, bright and early Sunday morning.
I without giving away your location too much, the editor is...
That's fine.
11 hours ahead of where we are. And, you know, with a different news cycle, and you just never know what people are hearing in other places, do you have... any idea what happened to the actor playing Matt?
Yeah.
No, so nobody knows, right?
What is the deal? No, what's your theory?
No, I don't have a theory. Look, there was a conspiracy going around about him leaving and COVID and all these things, but to do with the vaccines and so on. But it's complete nonsense if you try and line up the timelines, right? Because it wasn't, you know, the show broke up at the time before the vaccines were rolled out.
Yeah.
You know, for whatever reason, right, you've got to think it has to be serious for an actor to break contract. It's a premier show on Amazon. It's his big acting break. Something must have happened, right? Like, and you just feel for the guy and you hope that everything's okay back home.
Well, and he was pretty... prevalent on social media and stuff.
He was the best actor on the show.
Yeah, I agree.
Dude, he was. I didn't like the choice for him at Matt, but after one episode I was in. I'm super disappointed that they I really hope that Donald Finn can kind of pick it up and run with it. I hope they bring him back in a believable way. Somehow, you know, it's just like you said, it's really about the writing, right? If it's lazy writing, it's going to be frustrating.
Yeah, at least they left him in Tarvalon where he needs to be in book two. So perhaps they can pick up that story just, you know, in a very smooth way.
One of the first things I actually said about Matt, I was like, oh, you cut him stealing the bracelet. And I really love that you know, that's one of the things that I didn't like is that they, you know, Rand's dad and Matt's dad are like best friends. And like, they're two of the most stand-up guys in the village. And so I don't love that they changed his family.
Yeah, and honestly, it's not like I'm trying to change his characterization in the show, because it's clear that he's poor and he's not by the means, right?
Right.
But he didn't need to then also steal, right? Okay, yes, he's stealing to support his sisters and so on, but it wasn't strictly necessary. The way it's cut in the show, yes, he is selling a bracelet to Padan Fain later, but you could also get the impression that he's selling the family jewelry to try and make ends meet. And that's what I wanted to leave people with.
I loved it. I thought it was it's just a subtle change, but I think it changes his narrative so much that that's the kind of stuff that I thought loved.
You see the essential good in him, right? Like, he's really trying for his sisters.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. Because he's definitely, I know they're trying to make him a kind of a more duplicitous character and emphasize the rogue factor, because they have to, right? I mean, who's your favorite character? Do you have one, or is you just kind of like, you have a couple different ones, or?
In the books or in the show?
Oh, books. I'm going to talk books, probably.
Let's go both.
Actually, it's probably the same answer. I'm going to be boring. I'm going to say my favorite character is Rand, but purely because of the arc that he goes on. And I think if there's one chapter that really defines his arc, it's Veins of Gold, right? Like, there's nothing else in the books that's that moment of clarity for a character than what he has.
Which one? I don't know. I don't know chapter names as much. I just know parts of books.
Okay. Without giving too much spoilers, Veins of Gold, Rand on Dragonmount.
Okay.
Questioning why. Yeah.
With the Chodan call, right? He's going to destroy the world.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Questioning why he's doing what he's doing. And then having his moment of catharsis and realization. It's incredible writing.
Yeah. His like epiphany on Dragonmount. Yeah. No. Okay. Yeah. No, that's a pretty badass one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like Matt's, man.
Matt? Yeah, Matt's a fan favorite, honestly.
Yeah, how can you not love him, man?
Little scoundrel.
Exactly. And especially once he sort of starts the band.
Yeah.
I think they, you know, just the amount of fun those guys have and like their sheer insane prowess in battle and Matt's luck, of course, it's something cool to read.
I like Talmanis.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you wish you had cut out, because, you know, you wanted to show that Matt was caring for his sisters, you kind of had to leave in that his mom was not perfect, because I hear that was made up for the show. I'm still catching up. But, you know, you were able to cut out the fact that his dad was a womanizer out in there. But then you still had to leave that his mom was a little, you know, not good at home. Do you wish you could have cut that out if you could have cut around it?
Actually, there's a very small snip I'll make in the next iteration. And one thing you learn about fan editing, your job is never done. There's always things you want to go back and revisit. So there's a line. So he brings his mom in through the door, and that part you have to leave in, right? And she's kind of down and he's got her wrapped in the blanket and she's on the floor. There's a line in there where she says, "You're going to be just like your dad, damn prick like him."
Mm-hmm.
And I would just leave. I would just snip that last part out. And I'd rather be, "You're going to be just like your dad." Because in that scene, I remember it quite vividly. She's reaching out her hand to touch his face. And saying something like, "You're going to be just like your dad," and cutting out the rest, it can be ambiguous, right? It could be.
Yeah, leaves it open to interpretation.
Because he's caring, he brought her in. Maybe she was sick. Maybe she wasn't drunk. It can be ambiguous. And then it could be sort of like, you know, you're going to grow up to be someone who's caring and so on. And you just leave it sort of ambiguous.
Nice.
So that's what I'll do in the next cut.
Wow. One small edit like that, and it just changes the entire meaning.
It really does.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, and I feel like some of the stuff, I mean, like, obviously, it's very obvious that you're a book fan, like, just watching the fan edit, because the things that really stayed I just feel like if, like, you were just trying to, like, keep it, like, you know, you titled it Eye of the World, and it just seemed, it really felt like Eye of the World.
So this is interesting. I very explicitly did not set out to make it closer to the books, right? Because I think you're going to hamstring yourself if you try to make the show into something it isn't.
Yeah, makes sense.
As I mentioned at the start, what I really wanted to do was to create a film that has a proper narrative start, a proper build up, a proper sort of theme throughout, and then resolution and payoff at the end. The fact that the things that I cut out were things that were superfluous to the book, or the things that I kept in were things that are mainly from the books, is sort of coincidental to actually just telling the story, right? Because if you work from the end, Rand's going to confront the Dark One at the Eye, right? And he's going to be revealed as a Dragon Reborn. So if you take those two things and you work backwards to where you need to start from and what you can cut out to focus the story on that through line, you end up with what I ended up with. And it so happens to parallel the books, but that wasn't my intention.
So one of the things I did notice, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, at least in the beginning, you seemed that you were focusing more on Rand. Was that intentional, or was just the way the story was going to take you?
A combination of both, because I didn't like the mystery box aspect of the season, right? Not because I didn't like the concept. I thought the concept was fine. I think the execution let it down because, let's put it like this. The show wants to have a whodunit Agatha Christie type mystery, right? Like who's the killer, you know, who's the dragon? But it doesn't follow the genre norms of that type of writing where you need to lay clues down that the audience can actually track. And then your big reveal is somehow a natural conclusion of all the clues you dropped, so that when you rewatch the show, it's obvious in hindsight. The problem with the way they did it was they have the mystery, but the clues that they drop tend to be a lot of red herrings. And the reveal of the dragon is all contained in episode 7. There are no hints along the way. There's no channeling. It's all masked, hidden from us and so on. And then when you rewatch the show, there aren't any contextual clues that say, aha, it was obvious in hindsight, it was Rand. It isn't obvious. It's completely not obvious. The most obvious candidate is Nynaeve, right? With a raging sun moment, right? There is no other character that has a more, let's say, dragon-ish moment than Nynaeve does, both there and in the ways. So in trying to streamline that mystery, you start to remove red herrings. So you remove the line where Loghain says, like a raging sun in the cave, right? Although you keep the scene. You start to remove some conversations between Moraine and Lan about other candidates. Because these are all red herrings. You remove Egwene's line in episode 6 when she's talking to Moraine while Perrin's in the sickbed being healed by the Yellows, where she just blatantly asks, is he the dragon? You cut things like that out. As a result, yes, the story ends up focusing on Rand because he's the obvious dragon candidate. And it's kind of obvious from the cold open, as it should be, I think. And then you're left with, okay, there's the story that's central, right? There's this conflict between the dragon and the Dark One that's going to resolve itself. And we're waiting for the dragon to realize and acknowledge their identity and accept their fate almost in the story. And that's what the film is about, accepting your fate to go off and challenge the Dark One at the end.
Very good.
Hey, Jeremy.
Yeah.
Do you know who likes mystery boxes?
Who likes mystery boxes?
J.J. Abrams loves mystery boxes.
Oh. That is absolutely true.
He does write them well, though. He absolutely writes them well, and except that he doesn't conclude them, right? Like, if no.
Uh-oh. Don't get Jeremy started about Star Wars, dude.
No, but he writes the mystery box really well, right?
Like, he does.
In The Force Awakens, there are fantastic setups for mystery boxes, right? Luke's lightsaber, that's a story for another time, yeah? the flashes that Rey gets when she touches the lightsaber and things like that, you know? Who is this guy, this Kylo Ren, and how is he able to stop a blaster bolt using the Force type of thing? So there's all of these, like, very cool, interesting things that get thrown out. And, you know, unfortunately, then things took a left turn and then tried to take a right turn and get back on track and didn't quite work. But the actual setup was fantastic. And there's a way to do it that is intriguing, and there's a way to do it that's just frustrating. And I think the show kind of got the balance slightly wrong.
Well, this can be explained with a true story. I think it's a true story. It's one J.J. Abrams told a story. I don't know if it's true or not, but he told a story that his grandfather once bought him a mystery box. And the mystery, he knew the mystery was better than anything that could be inside that box. So he never opened it. So that's why he's bad at a mystery box reveal, because he never fucking revealed the mystery box.
Yeah, that's the whole point of the mystery box, is revealing.
And you know what? You still need to get to The Shadow Rising. But I'll tell you this. Robert Jordan writes fantastic mystery boxes, and the reveals are so surprising and so satisfying. Like you don't even know what you think you need to expect.
Yeah.
You think the mystery box is something, and then it's something completely else. And the reveal, the way he wrote and the way he revealed things, it's just on another level, right? The world building and the lore building in the series is insane.
Yeah, and I think that the difference between a J.J. Abrams and a Robert Jordan is Robert Jordan has an idea. He has the idea of where he's going to end, and then he builds a mystery box around that. J.J. Abrams builds a mystery box and goes, we're going to put something in there. I don't know what it's going to be.
I don't know. It's going to go in there. It's going to be great. We'll talk about it later.
It's a hatch.
It's a dagger in your horn box.
He goes, mystery box here. You guys figure it out. I'm out. I'm going to go get on my yacht, do whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
What's that? Lunch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I was just going to say, Star Wars is too big of a franchise to do that with, right? Like, you need to know where you're ending up if you're going
to
do that.
Yeah, to start 7, 8, and 9 without at least a blueprint is... Everyone dropped the ball on that one.
Well, and I didn't know about this little website, whatever the fire. I don't know, is it Fire Merc? Is that what it is? But I'm gonna go watch some of those Star Wars cuts.
So, by way of introduction, so Fire Merc is actually another fan editor, probably a more serious one. So he's got a team of people that he works with, and very kindly offered to host people's fan edits on his site. And I said, yeah, please do that. You know, it's an easier way for people to access it rather than trying to download it through BitTorrent and all these other means. You can just go and watch it streaming. And, you know, very nice guy and very big supporter of the fan editing community, of course. And yeah, please go ahead and watch different films on there. People put their heart and soul into these fan edits. It's really cool.
Yeah, I am a fan. So you mentioned in, you know, you gave your little synopsis of what you were trying to accomplish with this edit.
Mm-hmm.
So even though you said you just want this to just be its movie, no matter what happens later, how tempted? I mean, I'm guessing that you're already thinking about doing this with season two. Am I right?
Yes, of course. I'll definitely look at it.
And when that happens, we'll be doing a review and coming on if you want again.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. 100%. Absolutely.
This will hopefully be an annual event for our podcast for many seasons to come.
Fingers crossed.
Would you then maybe put a few things back in to this first movie to make sure that movie two makes sense? Okay.
Absolutely. So one of the things I kind of, you have to give yourself some allowances, I guess, if you're trying to cut a season down into a single film. And one of the allowances I gave myself is, look, tell the story for now and worry about setups for sequels later. So if there's things that, so there's certain scenes that I really wanted to keep in, for example, Nynaeve and Egwene meeting the Emhyllyn, right? I mean, that scene I really wanted to keep. It's an extra 5-ish minutes. Not much you can cut from that, but I know that somewhere in season two, they will have already met the Emhyllyn, and you know, the conversation will start from a different point. So I'm going to need to go back and put that back in. But for now, for the film that is there in the time frame that already exceeded my desire, you know, I really wanted to get it down to 4 hours. It's 4 hours, 26, and it is what it is, but that's the minimum I could have and still be a coherent film. I'll need to go back and put more things in at the end.
Can I give you a quick compliment too?
Sure.
The scene with it's not even a scene, but the cold open for the episode with Swan when she's a little girl.
Yes.
Where you cut all that out.
Yes.
One of them, I really disliked that whole beginning episode part. Hated it because it was so superfluous to the show. It didn't need to be put in there. You've wasted so much time and effort and money to something that didn't need to be there. And I said, when Swan shows up, she is a queen. Like, she needs to be mysterious.
Exactly.
And when you cut all that stuff out, when she shows up, you're like, oh, holy cow, who is this lady? And, you know, she's sitting there in the front with all these other Aes Sedai around her, and they're all like looking to her. It was what Fatty and I had, and Dez had talked about, what I wanted to see from the show. And you just made it perfect.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And I think there's an element of the show that I characterize as over-explaining. I think there's a bit too much hand-holding of the audience that doesn't need to be there. You can let things play out and let, you know, A, either leave the audience in mystery, or B, more exciting, leave them to draw their own conclusions. And then, you know, they can prove themselves right or wrong as you reveal more information. This one is a great example. I think seeing Swan, you know Moraine already, you know Leandrin, and you know Alana from the previous episode, and to see them scared shitless at the Amelin calling them forward is already a powerful thing, right? Like, you don't need to know that the Amelin was a small girl and came from a fishing village, et cetera, et cetera.
No, you just need to know that she's important. And Jeremy jumped in and was like, I was actually waiting for him to say it because I was like, dude, he pointed out, like, it made it so much more like, I think, like you said, keeping the mystery is okay. But I think I almost feel like because of Winter Dragon and how people are like, I don't get it. But it's like, they were scared of doing that again. So I think they're erring on the side of over-explaining now. And that's also can be bad too. So I totally agree with you.
Yeah, for want of a better word, it's a boring narrative structure, right? Just to explain things to people in linear order. Here's what you need to know. Here's the introduction to the character. Now she's a grown woman and she's the Amelin seat. It's like, okay, I didn't need to, you know.
I don't need to know her dad had one hand and had a hard time fishing and she helped him by channeling. Like, that's not important.
Yeah. Put me in the middle of the story and sort of take me places, right? And let me figure it out as I go. And then you make it rewatchable, right? Because you could even reveal that information somehow later. And then when you rewatch the show, you say, oh, okay, this...
Yeah, that could be a cold open at any point.
Exactly.
Yeah, and because of that, you lost some of the, you know, main characters from the books, or you had less screen time for some of the better characters. You know, we got almost no Tom Marilyn. Tom Marilyn is one of the best characters in the entire books, and he was pretty good on the show, but because of that stupid opening that took like 10 minutes or whatever it was, we could have had something better.
Yeah, that's true. I think one thing to mention at this point, I think, because we are starting a little bit to bash the show, it's very easy. It's very easy to critique a finished product because you can see it all laid out and you can say, oh, this part doesn't work and this part didn't land as well as we thought it would and so on. It's extremely difficult to write and then shoot and direct and then edit these things, right? Like, it's, you don't know what you're going to get until you've created it. And then you've already spent all the money, right?
Yeah. You mean we couldn't do all this? I can't play quarterback?
You know, you're left with the footage you have and you have to edit it into what's there. And you have a certain runtime and you have all these other expectations from the studio, et cetera. I don't envy their job. It's super easy to criticize after the fact, which is what we do. We're not filmmakers. We're film critics in some sense or form.
I say it every week. I'm like, really, Fatty, this is what you've given me? I gotta make a podcast out of this?
What? I thought I was awesome.
I make you awesome.
I just think I listen every Friday and go, man, I'm so fucking hilarious.
And coherent.
Damn, I'm funny. These guys you guys just set me up and I just knock them down.
Next, what did you, and editing audio is much easier than video. Like I said, I do have some experience. So I know what it's like when you're just watching something or listening to something over and over again going, do I need it? Do I not need it? Can I cut this down?
Mm.
Like what scenes still haunt you at night that you had to watch 1,000 times to figure out how to cut around it or finally cut it out or... shit, maybe I should go back and put that back in.
Good question. So not a scene and nothing that gives me nightmares per se, but let me just quickly explain the editing process that I went through. So I took all the episodes. I trimmed out what I knew I didn't want to be in, and I made what you'd call an assembly cut, right? And that was about 6 hours. And then I invited a few folks to review the cut and make more suggestions for things to trim down. And then revision two was a 5-hour cut and I needed to get it down further. We cut then so much that revision three was a 4-hour cut. And then I started, you know, then I watched it and I said to myself, look, there's parts of the story that doesn't hang together. Like, we haven't explained things here. Characters are, you know, characters have knowledge that we haven't shown them to be having. Or they're taking actions that don't make sense. And it was adding back those 26 extra minutes to fill in that really took the time. One of the main things was this, Dragon Reborn mystery box thing. So I had a cut in the 4-hour version, which didn't have Moraine acknowledging that one of them were the Dragon Reborn. And I was trying for the life of me to work out, how do we get this party to the Eye of the World without having this Dragon Reborn mystery hanging over the story the whole time. And it couldn't be done. The dialogue, so what you end up doing is, right, like you trim it out of the first four or five episodes, especially episode one and episode two. And then you get to episode six, where Swan and Moraine are having their conversation after going through the Tarangriel to meet up in the fishing hut. And there you start to, it starts to unravel, because the dialogue doesn't exist to stitch it together. And then you realize, oh no, I have a big problem here. But I've already cut out, you know, episodes one to four. I've cut the conversation in episode seven, just before the love triangle, like the conversation about going to the eye. I've cut out some of Min's dialogue with Moraine, and I've got to put all of that back in, because none of this is going to work. We need to put the dragon mystery back in, but we can de-emphasize. And that took a hang of a long time, because cutting footage is fine. You make a cut, you know, the timeline, it shoves the right side of the cut against the left side of the cut, and you blend a little bit of audio. Sort of putting things back in is time consuming. You need to literally, on your timeline, need to move the scene up a few minutes to give yourself a blank space in the timeline. Then you need to extend your video and your audio again, and then you need to retrim it and stitch it all back together. So I had to do that in lots of places. That for me was, but it was worth it in the end, because I think without entirely cutting out the Dragon Reborn identity mystery thing, we landed on a balance where it's in the show, but it's not the purpose of the show, right? It's there. Like, the dragon needs to, it's more a case of the dragon needs to self-actualize and accept their fate, rather than we need to figure out who the dragon is.
Yeah. It's more about the dragon's journey, not who the dragon is. It's more like who the dragon is, like, as a person, and who he becomes, the journey. It's, we talk about how, oh, he's like, I killed the Dark One, it's over. It's like, oh, Rand, that's so cute. You have so much more to go through, and it's fucking heartbreaking.
Yeah.
I have two questions, actually. That brings up two questions in my mind.
Sure.
Did you move anything else majorly besides the cold open with Tigraine? It's two-parter, but then I saw the thing you did on Twitter with the deep fake Moraine voice.
Yeah.
Are you doing that so you can possibly add dialogue sometimes? Or are you just playing around with it, or?
I'll come back to that one. Let me answer the first one. So besides the cold open from seven being used all the way at the start, almost everything else is in linear order, right? There is no chopping and changing of scenes except in one case. So there's a part in episode five where Loial, Nynaeve, and Leandrin are talking in the corridor in the White Tower. Leandrin sends her off to the gardens. And the immediate next scene is Loial coming into Rand and Matt's room saying, I've been to the gardens. Here's this woman with the braid you were talking about. And Nynaeve steps in. And in the series, it was quite jarring that there's no time elapsed in between. So what I did there was I moved some of the later dialogue between Moraine and Alana into that gap. And I think some Perrin and Egwene in the White Camp capture into that gap. And then I put the Loial Rand thing behind that. So it gave an illusion of elapsed time, and that kind of fixed up that edit. But other than that, everything was in linear order. I am thinking of, for, you know, as I say, you keep tweaking. I do want to move a few things around, and I need to check if it works. In the battle with the Trolloc army at the end, one of the great sort of, we know that thing was affected by COVID and so on and so forth, and it didn't really land properly, impactfully on the screen. One of my main issues with that scene is that, and people talk about the power scaling problem, they kill the Trolloc army, and here's what most people get wrong. They say they killed the Trolloc army, and they killed three channelers in doing so. But if you actually watch the scene, only one of them dies before the Trollocs get killed. And Melissa and the other gray-haired lady die afterwards. The Trollocs are all dead.
Yeah, Amelisa kills them.
Yep. She gets addicted to the One Power. She overdraws and kills them. And then you think to yourself, hang on, they could kill 10,000 Trollocs for the sacrifice of one really, really weak, untrained channeler. That doesn't make sense. So I do want to attempt, and it'll be difficult, I want to attempt to recut it in such a way that all three of them die in calling down that lightning on the Trollocs. And then you kind of, okay, fine. They sacrificed three channelers to kill these people, and they drained Egwene and Nynaeve quite a lot. It still doesn't fix the power scaling problem, but it probably lands a bit better. So that's some nonlinear order.
Oh God, I'm so glad you cut the fish flopping and the Nynaeve resurrection thing. Oh God, just thank you. I just like, it was because not only did we not get what Rand was doing at the end of the Eye of the World in any shape or form, that's what we got. I was just like, poopies.
Yeah, exactly. And they really oversold the Nynaeve burnt out look, right? And
yeah, she came back way too easy from no eyes.
Sort of, it's really weird to understand what's happening in that scene. It starts with Nynaeve absorbing Egwene's damage while linked in the circle.
Right.
Right? So that Egwene doesn't burn out. And then, like, that's just not an ability. That just doesn't exist.
Yeah, that's not something that happens at all in the books, no.
And it's not the fact that it's in the show and not in the books that's the problem. It's the fact that it's a just-in-time mechanic to write yourself out of a problem, right?
I know. I try to say it was okay when we were talking about it. I'm like, it's fine.
Yeah. No, but you know, just from a screenwriting point of view, right? Like, you haven't established earlier in the season that is a magical mechanic that's possible. So you haven't created any setup for it, because then it would have paid off. That would have been actually a good way to have done it. But now you're just introducing a solution in the same scene as you introduce a problem. That's, you know, it's bad screenwriting, and it doesn't land well with an audience. And then, of course, Egwene resurrecting Nynaeve is what it is. But easy to cut out.
Why wouldn't you just, why wouldn't you just flip those? Because anybody who knows even a hint about the show knows that Nynaeve is the healer. Why wouldn't you just flip
exactly?
It? Everybody knows Egwene can't really heal that much. She does a little, but not very much at all. It's just like, doy, what? You know what's funny? I love everything so much. I had no disagreements. The more I've been hanging out with this other asshole, the one down the middle, he's like making me a skeptic. I'm like, I was sitting here thinking about something I was pissed off the other day, just not even like podcast. I wasn't even thinking about the podcast or nothing. I was just kind of like, I think I was watching the recut, and I started thinking about something, and I had to like rewind 20 minutes because I was like, yeah, that doesn't make any sense. That makes me mad. What the hell? Why would they even do that? But they could have just flipped it. I think that might have even been it. I'm just like, all they had to do was just flip their spots in the line. That's it.
Exactly.
I'm like, oh!
Nynaeve healing Egwene from near death would have been such a payoff to the cave scene, right? Like, it's, okay, she's the healer. She could do it.
Dude, yeah, the cave scene, the ways, yeah.
And she's the strongest in 1,000 years. She's the only one that can bring someone back who is so close to death. Easy fix.
They even say that, back in the Age of Legends, that, channelers could fan a spark of life back to, back then. And you're like, oh, you set it up, but you set it up with the wrong
Apparently
person.
Apparently, Egwene can too, because you can have your eyes completely burned out, and then she's like, they're back.
Bring your eyes back.
Jesus. Oh, I have a question for you, brother.
Oh, sorry. No, you're sorry. The second part of your question that I forgot about, the deepfake thing.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about it already. Yeah, the deepfake voice with Moraine. Because it was pretty good. I thought it was pretty believable, man. If you had just a short clip, I think it would work.
Yeah, it needs a bit of, let's say, fine tuning to get the rough edges of a mechanical or robotic sounding voice.
It sounds a little robotic still, but...
So basically what... There's a whole community around deepfake things, right? People who work on these AI models and so on. I'm not one of them, but, I just got in touch with some guy through the fan editing forums and things like that. And basically what we set out to do was just to create a deepfake voice model based on the audiobooks, because she read The Eye of the Wolf. So there's 30 hours of really, really clean, very, very...
I really like that cut, by the way. I don't know if you've listened to it at all, other than the editing part. It's good. She does a good job.
I need to listen. I'm not a big audiobook person, but definitely will give it a listen at some point. But yeah, so you have 30 hours of very clean audio in a studio, right? So there's no noise, no nothing. So you have a very clean data set, and then this guy just set to work and fed it into the model. And, it still needs some work. Like I said, we need to take off the rough edges. But yeah, what I was trying to do is to somehow fix the Matt departure at the Waygate in episode 6. They had a really good way to do it, and they chose not to, which is strange for me. She heals Matt in the sick bed, and all they needed to do was to say, look, he needs to stay here. He's not yet fully out of the woods. He needs to stay here to recover, and then go to the Waygate without him. And the show is in exactly the same place as before. They didn't do that. So there's two places you could do it. You could either try and insert a line of dialogue on the balcony when she's talking to Rand after the fact, or you can do it at the Waygate where she just tells, Matt to stay behind to and return to Tarvalon to keep getting healed and so on. So I'm playing around with that and trying to see if it can work. It'll be a tough insert. I'm trying to make it that it feels natural, but they were in a tough place anyway. So I'll try and see what can be done.
Yeah, it'll be tough with them all screaming, no, no, while the gate's closing.
That you can cut, right? So that you can literally just cut that scene, let the Waygate close, and then move on to the next episode. The challenge will be to believably insert Moraine telling Matt to return to Tarvalon, or if you do it on the balcony in their room after she healed him on the bed, then you need to rotoscope Matt out of the Waygate scenes, which I've been trying to do, but this goes beyond my editing skills, so I need to go and look up some tutorials and so on.
Can we get Amazon on the horn? Can we get this guy a job? Get him on the show.
Get this guy a job.
He needs to be in the writer's room to just negate all the dumb shit.
No,
that
it's difficult, man. Like it's easy to criticize at the end because you see the whole product laid out in front of you. It's difficult when you're in the writer's room writing this stuff. You don't know how it's going to look on the screen, right? It sounds good on the page.
Oh man, that's not to be a negative on anybody else. That's just meant to be complimentary to you.
Thanks. Now, I do appreciate it, but no, I'm not going to be, I'm not qualified. Let's put it like that.
And you're not taking the pay cut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you perfect your deep fake skills, how many sheep herders are you going to insert into this first movie?
All yeah. The sheep herders.
I'll have to work something in. I'll have to work just, something in for
well,
sure.
Well, Lan has to say it eventually. So, you know.
He better.
You can bring all those back and dub them in.
Yeah, let's hope for season two, right? Because they showed the shot of Lan training. So I hope he gets a chance to train Rand.
Definitely.
I know. I hope they get that part. That's one of the things I really want to see in season two is Rand and Matt, or Rand and Lan some alone time. His little mentorship of Rand is good stuff.
This may be a naive question from the new guy here, so I'm kind of asking everybody: do Moraine and the Amerlin do they have sex in the books?
No, there's no sex in the books.
So that's why that was one scene I was surprised you left in.
Yeah, and it comes back to my sort of thing about I'm not trying to bring the cut closer to the books. I'm trying to make a cut that is focused on a particular story and a particular line of you know, narrative from the start to the finish. And for me, that, you know, that scene, it adds context to the stuff that happens in the throne room, mm-hmm. in the hall of the tower, in front of the other Aes Sedai. So it's important context to know that they are in cahoots and they have a relationship and they're working together, right?
Absolutely.
It's something that they've taken, you know, there is a prequel novel, New Spring, which you shouldn't read until you get.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they have a relationship, but they talk about how when they finally got raised, they got raised around the same time that Guitarra Amoroso had the foretelling. So, and they, I was just listening, I think Shadow Rising, they talk about how they walked away from each other, basically, when they became sisters. And so Moraine went out hunting and then, you know, Suan went on to become the Emerald Seat. So
perfect. So I've tried to maintain some kind of well, I've just lost everything. I haven't maintained anything because I can't remember. just try to get through our questions and not totally overwhelm you. But I am now just, you know, I just want to officially open the floodgates to especially Jeremy and Fatty, who, like, you know, have been fans, you know, since forever, like you. So we're just going to I just wanted to warn you. We're going to open the floodgates here for a few minutes.
No, bring it on. Bring it on.
So I one of the questions I was going to ask you, too, is why'd you cut the baby?
Where's my baby?
This was an instant.
Wait a second. What baby?
The baby.
Yeah, exactly. There was so the scene where they're talking. It's Luz Theron when it was
the Coals Open with Luz Theron.
You remember that one?
Ah, yes. Okay.
What baby?
That baby is the mystery box.
Desmond was so confused. Like, oh, I don't understand. Why was that baby there? We're like, it's just a baby, dude. Don't worry about it.
He's like, is it Rand? Is he the dragon? Is it a lineage thing?
I talked about it for 3 episodes before they finally were just like, enough. Enough with the baby.
Shut up about the baby.
Yeah. It's an Easter egg for book readers, just to answer the question, right? Because you know from the prologue of book one exactly what's happened to that baby.
Yeah, that baby's...
Oh. That baby is barbecued.
Oh, poor baby.
That baby is mincemeat.
Well, now you just got real
remember
sad.
Remember the really bad lightning in Winter Dragon? That's what happened to that baby.
Yeah.
It's like a dirty microwave.
Billy
zap,
Zane.
Zap, zap, zap.
Yeah.
Destroyed it.
Billy Zane.
Yeah, honestly, in the end, there just wasn't space for it, right? So there's 2 cold opens that I cut that I wished I could keep. The one was that, and the other one was the Loghain cold open. But it doesn't fit in the story. Like, there isn't the time or place to actually fit it, that it feels natural. And sticking it in anywhere, you know, even in the most apt spot would be, you know, a few minutes wasted on something that's not relevant to the main plot line. So, that's the reason I had to cut it. I did put a version of it on my YouTube channel, just with some different subtitles to, let's say, calm down some fans who went berserk when they saw what was on screen. But I didn't end up using it in the end. It was in one of the versions, probably in the 5-hour cut. It was one of the cold opens, but then I took it out again.
This may be cutting at your heart a little bit. What's the worst criticism that got? Like, have you really pissed anyone off with this cut?
So, funny enough, yes, somehow. I stumbled onto some Twitter thread where people were taking shots at the fan edit because of what I cut out, right? So people really like things like the Steppen arc. They like the Warder bond and so on.
Oh.
And for the sake of actually having a through line to the story, which, like I said, the dragon realizing and accepting his fate and so on, those things are cut, right? They're very, very good world building. Those are very good scenes. I love the Warder campfire scene. Even the Steppen arc. The Steppen arc is good writing and good production. It's just not the right allocation of time for what the season needed to do. Good in isolation, bad in the context of a short season. And people just sort of accusing me of things that I had no intention of doing, right? Like, cutting out characters and scenes, as if I don't like characterization and I just want to do, just want the plot of the three main boys and all of these things. Whatever. I think people just misunderstood my intention, because I also had, prior to that, been very vocal about being critical of the show. So, take that with a pinch of salt. I did have one really good review criticizing the fan edit, but like on proper merits, right? Like on storytelling and screenwriting and setups and payoffs and things that weren't kept in the show that could make it a bit more confusing. And I have taken that review and as I said, I'm busy tweaking at the moment. So I'm trying to address some of those points because I think they are quite valid. But other than that, honestly, it's been really, really supportive, which has been really, really nice. It's the first thing I've done that's ever in my life that's so public. And for people to appreciate it and sort of praise it on that level has been really, self-affirming?
Yeah.
Self-satisfying.
Exactly.
And I just want to point out to our listeners that we have no idea what this gentleman looks like. We're looking at a beautiful...
Yeah, sure, he looks like a snake eating his own tail with words on it, dude. Come on. Is that not his face?
His anonymity persists.
He's a smart man.
Well, like I said, I thought maybe at first I was kind of like, oh man, I'm super excited about this. And am I just excited about it because I can fill in all the blanks myself? And my wife pointed out, she just said, no. She goes, from the cold open, and she's like, it's immediately more interesting than some girl getting shoved off of a cliff into a river. She's like, I'm like, why would they just seem like assholes? I don't want to watch this show. She's like, this chick's, it's like, immediately, why is she pregnant? What's in the snow? Who are these guys trying to kill her? Why is she by herself? What the hell's going on here? It draws you in so much more immediately. And you don't have, there are some things that you try to do and make vague that just don't draw you in at all. Winter Dragon. But there is also something like that cold open that, even though you have no context and no clue and don't know what's going on at all, it doesn't matter because all you want to do is stick around to figure out what it is.
Yep. And that's the mystery box, right? You get the good mystery box, which draws you in, and then you get the not so good mystery box, which is just frustrating. So, for example, having this whole thing about the Dragon Reborn identity is the premise is good. The execution falls flat. And there's a mystery box that doesn't somehow come together in the series. I like that you mentioned the cold open. It wasn't originally the cold open for the movie. It was going to be the Lutheran Alatra dialogue. But eventually, I moved the blood snow scene from sort of midway in the movie to all the way to the front, and it works so much better. It's like you said, it just immediately throws you into action, which is good. Like, it's intriguing, so the show is going to have action, and it raises so many questions, right? And why is this woman pregnant? What's she doing in the snow? Where is this taking place? Who is she fighting against? How in the hell is she able to take down that many soldiers as one person alone? Yeah, how is she so good at fighting?
And 9 months pregnant.
And it just, it raises all the right questions, right? Because now you want to find out everything. And then what's going to happen to her? This guy, held her at sword point at the end before cutting away.
Were you mad that she showed her face?
I was trying.
Jeremy was mad. She's like, why did she show her face?
It would have been, if you know her backstory, and you need to get to book four, dude. It's amazing. If you know her backstory, then you know she would have veiled, right?
Let's just
leave it there, right? Like, of all the people who would not kill without veiling, she would be like, she would hold on to that more than anything else just to prove herself, right?
Oh my God. That's awesome.
So I asked around because I'm not a visual, I'm not a VFX guy at all. I have no experience in this stuff. I have asked and people have told me it's extremely difficult / time consuming. So I don't know if it will be possible to try to digitally put the veil back on her, because there is a very clean close-up shot of her face veiled at the start of that sequence. So you can get a really nice image of the veil. And the problem is tracking her face in each and every shot after that. And there's a lot of cuts and it's at different distances and zooms and the camera's moving around and all sorts to try and put that veil back on it. It's too difficult and there's no guarantee it'll look right.
Wipe that smirk off your face, Jeremy. You're way too satisfied about that answer, bro.
You're like pulling everything you said right out of my brain. That is exactly what I said.
No, that's exactly what he said. He was so mad we were talking about it. He's like, I hate it.
I just did it a lot less eloquently.
I was just like, it's TV, man. They have to give you some background on who she is for when they reveal her. No, she's an IO. She would never uncover her face.
You could have given background to her with her trying to pull her veil up as they're attacking or not killing people because she hasn't had the veil up. Like, you know, fighting, bang, bang, bang. You know, oh, shoot, tries to pull her veil up. And then, you know, you could have done it that way.
Yeah, exactly. And honestly, it would have dovetailed so nicely with Tom's explanation to Matt at the ailment in the cage just outside Breen Spring.
Yeah, absolutely.
When he talks about how, you know, when their veil is up, then you're as good as dead. And we just saw it in the cold open, right?
Yeah, he's like, this man wasn't a threat.
Exactly. It's one of the things I'd really like to do. I'd pay someone to do it if I think it could be done cheaply or quickly. But still, I'll keep plugging away and finding someone, you know, trying to find someone to volunteer it and take it from there.
You can't right all their wrongs. It's not, you know, you're great. You're just not a miracle worker.
Wow.
Honestly, that's high praise. Thank you very much. But I think, you know, if you look at the stuff that the Star Wars fandom are able to do, like there's people who have done VFX on lightsabers, on Darth Vader, on stormtroopers, on Palpatine. People, you know, there's, dude, you said you're going to look at that website, right? And watch some other fan edits and fan films and so on.
Oh, yeah. I've signed in, man. I'm going to do it. Definitely.
If you go down the Star Wars rabbit hole, I think you can spend days and weeks there. People have inserted their own things into Star Wars films. There's a fan created, you know, the Obi-Wan Vader fight from A New Hope, right?
I saw this.
Yeah, I've seen that.
There's a fan, and you know how it's like, and that's just people, that's just actors in costumes, right? And intercutting with the original footage and having their own, you know, lightsaber VFX and all that. People are nuts over Star Wars. So there's also this one guy who's doing an Obi-Wan edit, and he's literally, and he's a VFX guy. So he's painting extra stuff in the background. He's making the Inquisitors look more accurate to the comics and so on and so forth. It's crazy what they can do.
Have you ever watched Star Wars Theory?
I have not.
On YouTube, he has made, I think he's on, he might be on the second part, it might be done. He's made a Vader movie, and it's pretty good. It's pretty good. And he was going to be making a second part about it where, like, I think Mace Windu was, like, still living. It's pretty interesting. It's pretty good. But, Star Wars, I'm going to have to go down that rabbit hole because you sound like a reader. I don't know if you've read any of those Star Wars books. I had read, like, 30-something of them before they were no longer canon, and I about shit myself.
So, yeah, thanks. I just want to thank the editor right now. This will be the last podcast we record for a couple months because Justin is currently watching Star Wars fan edits. So we'll,
yeah.
Yeah.
hopefully he'll be done with that by the time season two starts. But
Fatty's on hiatus doing nothing. Was there any like characters coming from the show, like when they casted it, you're just like, oh, I'm not feeling like their look or anything like that?
Not really. I wasn't following too much the casting news. And I think by and large, the casting is probably the strongest aspect of the show. I think they got Moraine right. Rosamund Pike's done a phenomenal job. The rest of the guys are good. And honestly, I feel bad criticizing actors because, you know, their work is front and center on screen.
I just mean more like their look, as far as like, you know, where you're like, oh man, that's not what I, not so much the actor per se, just as like, you know, oh man, that's not what I pictured Perrin as, or whatever.
Yeah. No, so none of the actors match my headcanon, right? Because your headcanon, you're always going off some very strange concepts and so on. But I think by and large, it was fine. I think especially like the main seven, right? The Image Shield 5 and Lannen Moraine, pretty good casting overall.
I would agree. Jeremy, what did you say? Lan should look like Worf from Star Trek.
Oh, that was my dream.
That's just because that's what he looked like on the cover of the first book.
He did, but also
he could be a bit more stony faced, right? Like,
thank you.
The way Robert Jordan describes him, his face is like,
yeah,
that.
Yeah, Daniel Henney's kind of pretty.
Yeah, he's way too pretty of a man.
He is.
That shaved hair is going to make him a little bumpier.
Yeah, I think he needed to be someone a little bit older, you know, because he's described as being gray at the temples.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, you know, a little bit of that would have given him a bit more age, a bit more experience. You know, he's a warrior that has seen quite a lot and has years and years and years of battle. Daniel Henney looks, I mean, he looks younger than he is, but he looks a bit too young in the role. I think they should have just aged him a little bit in terms of makeup and things like that.
I think you're right.
He'll be 8 years old. I mean, if this thing goes the distance, he'll be 8 years older when it's done.
That's true.
So he might be watching him grow up in the show might.
That being said, I thought he was awesome as Lan. I think he was phenomenal.
Yeah, I just wish they gave him a bit more battle scenes, right? So he does Winter Night. Episode 4 doesn't really count because I don't, you know, he swung a sword in anger once in that scene. And then for the rest of the season.
Yeah, then he gets hit in the neck.
Yeah. And then for the rest of the season, he doesn't actually participate in a battle, which is a pity.
Yeah, because you get to see really how badass he is on their trip to the Eye through the Blight and their way, like when they're really kind of racing to the Blight, you get to see like how capable he is actually. And
exactly. And I think that, you know, probably that's part of the stuff that got affected by COVID, because they had to replace the Blight, they had to replace the Trolloc actors with all the CGI.
Yeah.
And then Daniel Henney was available for like one day of shooting due to COVID restrictions and delays, and he had other movies and things doing.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So that's why in the last episode, all he does is walk through the Blight and reach Moraine, is because they just didn't have time with him.
Really?
He had to shoot that, get in, get out, and go back to his other movie or series he was busy shooting at the time.
Wow, really? I didn't really realize that they were that restricted. I thought it was just kind of like normal, like, oh, you know, we have to go through all these extra protocols. I didn't know that they were that bad.
No, they were truly, well and truly screwed over. They had a very fantastic location selected for the Blight. They had the Trolloc stunt actors. I mean, we saw how good episode one's Trollocs looked and so on.
Yeah.
You know, they had all these things planned out, and all of that, whatever money they spent on that, all flushed down the drain. They weren't allowed to film because of COVID restrictions. So they had to do everything in CGI.
It's a bummer.
They already spent the money. So they didn't even have the money to do the CGI well. And that's what happened.
There we go. See, there's reasons. They're not just jerks.
Oh, I figured there was reasons. I didn't know it was that really bad, though. That's encouraging, though, for season two to me, because I think that, like you said, it's a known quantity now. We should be able to run through it and do all the things that we need to do, and hopefully they just kill it. I was super excited about the trailer. Like, we did an hour and some change with the 1 minute trailer, because I was so wound up at the beginning. I was like, ah, rah, 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 rah. That's why Desmond's so annoyed with me. It's been 3 weeks and he's still pissed.
Hey, a 60-second video to a 4-hour podcast.
That's what we're supposed to do. We're creating content.
I've got to go back and listen to that one. Honestly, I'm going to go do that.
If you do the math right, then this one has to be 2.5 days long, because it's a 4.5-hour clip.
I'll keep recording when you guys hang up, and I'll just talk to myself for a couple hours.
Oh, no.
I got dogs. They're very attentive when I speak, so.
Before we wrap everything up, I want to make sure that you get any, I know you don't want people contacting you directly, but just any hashtags or @s where people can find your work or chat with you on Twitter.
No, I'm very happy for people to contact me. I really like getting feedback on the fan edit, you know, listening to people's reviews, even if it's negative feedback. I think I can use that in the next iteration. And obviously, anything people have to say, I really like to hear it. So I am What Fan Edit, WOT Fan Edit, all one word, on almost all the social media. So @WhatFanEdit on Twitter. I'm u/WhatFanEdit on Reddit. You can email me, whatfanedit@gmail.com. And on YouTube, I go by Wheel of Time Fan Edit. So you'll be able to find some clips of the movie in there. I've put up some clips, especially where I've made some significant changes and so on, so people can see what they're in for if they do watch the edit. And then also, you know, if you're trying to find it, you can find download links on my Twitter, on my YouTube, and on my Reddit user page. It's available for download, and you can stream it on Firemerk's website, which is also posted somewhere on my socials.
Do yourself a favor, people. Check it out. One last call. Jeremy, Fatty.
Well, no, I just wanted to reiterate, you know, if you want to watch something before the new season starts, and maybe even if you want to just compare and contrast, please watch this edit. It is great, and it cuts out a lot of the fat. It's just really good. And we thank you for coming on, too. And I don't want to speak for everybody, but you're welcome to come back anytime, because you really had a lot of insight and a lot of stuff that you, well, let's just say you agreed with me most of the time. So it was great. Come back anytime. I'm a big fan.
He's a big fan of that. He's a just like I'm a big fan of hearing that my own voice. He's a big fan of people agreeing.
Oh,
with him.
Big time. Big time.
We're from the same family. We're narcissistic assholes.
Thank you again.
We're nice.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you guys for having me on. It's really awesome to be invited onto a podcast. I really, really appreciate it. And for you guys, you know, taking the time to watch the film. Dropping your review, which I listened to earlier this week. Fantastic. Thank you so much. And for having me on, I really, really appreciate it. And I won't forget it. And for sure, right? Anytime you want me on, just let me know. I'm happy to come back and continue the conversation.
I would love to, now that we've opened this conversation with you, we obviously really want to talk to you, you know, after, you know, you get a fan edit of season two up. But I think it would be really fun, maybe as when season two concludes, I think it would be fun to have you on and just kind of get your opening thoughts about what you're hoping to do. And then, you know, let you work for a couple months. And then after we watch it, get you back on and see what you were able to do from your original thoughts.
You're an honorary wolf brother now.
Absolutely.
Brother.
That's right.
Oh, fantastic.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
For the record, I'm the one who does most of the Twitter stuff. So mostly you're talking to me and my terrible typing skills. like fat hobbit thumbs. And, yeah. I'm sorry.
You can tell when I chime in because I use punctuation. You're like, oh, Desmond's on today.
Oh, Des has written a corporate email before.
Yeah. Uses punctuation and capitals.
Thanks, guys. Now, definitely, you know, let's keep the conversation going. And, you know, I'm sure season two will have its own twists and turns and surprises. I'll be very, very happy to share my thoughts and chat and hang out with you guys. I think this has been a very cool experience. And I really want to thank you. And to your listeners, of course, for tuning in.
All six of them. Thanks, Mom. I'm just kidding.
Maybe one last couple of thoughts from my side. I think I just want to encourage people, right? If they have a property that they're passionate about and they feel that, you know, there's some creative outlet that they need to really express how they feel. I think fan editing is a kind of a really cool thing to get into. Most fan editors are people like me, just, you know, have a laptop, have some spare time. Not you don't have to be a professional. Just pick up the software and just start tinkering around. It's very sort of therapeutic and a good sort of creative way to get your ideas out there. And I think it's open for everyone. It's not this sort of closely guarded secret. And I'd encourage people to really get into it. It's really fun once you start and you learn a lot of things. And you know, people are always super helpful and so on. So I would encourage everyone to do that. And lastly, I just want to thank my wife for putting up with me for the past I don't know how many months and weeks while I was doing the edit, patience of a saint, you know, sacrificing our weekends and so on, so that I could be sitting behind the PC the whole time. So thank you so much.
Let's take a moment and give it up for all of our wives who put up with us.
Yes. I was just going to say the same thing. I go, I would like to thank my wife for being supportive of this and like, just like trying not to roll her eyes when I'm like, and then she's like, I get it. You like it. It's awesome. I love you. It's awesome, but I don't.
Yes, I'd like to thank my wife for just putting up with me for everything. I mean, literally everything.
Oh, you're not that bad.
Shucks.
We're at least we're all cute.
Yeah.
Thank you all for listening to our podcast. Check us out on Twitter. We are Wolf Brothers at Parst Ailman. That is Wolf Brothers at Parst Ailman. I'm going to keep it short and sweet and just say that I am your deep fake Vader. Yes!
May you always find water and shade. And I hate sand because it gets in everything.
Hashtag Billy Zane is Darth Maul.
Not, no.
Deepfaked.
More
deepfaked.
Happy watching.
Awesome. Welcome to the pack, brother.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Everyone have a great night, Fatty and Jeremy, and have a great day, editor. It's the sun's
thank
up.
You.
The coffee's flowing. You got the day ahead of us.
Jeremy, Slippy, love you guys. Editor, nice to meet you, man. Thanks for coming on, brother. I appreciate you.
Likewise.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone. Appreciate it.
Look, it's super unprofessional.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.
Yes, somehow.